You're listening to WERALP Arlington 96.7 FM. Welcome to another episode of the world-famous award-winning Picture Lock. We got to jump straight in. No time for pleasantries. Let's get it in. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and I'm really excited because, you know what, folks? This marks 1 year since I have been doing the fallback spring forward segment for Picture Lock. And within that, basically, because fall is right around the corner, we look at some of the most anticipated films for the fall and those that we feel like could fall back. And, you know, the person that started this with me a year ago, he was here with me in the spring, and now he's here again in the fall. Mr. Robert Winship is on the line. Robert, what's up?
Oh, man, I'm super excited to talk about this. I can't believe it's been a year that we've been doing this. I just want to want to thank my family. I want to thank you, Mr. Sampson. I want to thank the good people at WERA for making this happen. This is it's life is but a dream. Here we go. Here's to another year.
I love it. I'm gonna have to come up with something witty for like spring, winter. Winter is coming, or I don't know. I don't even really watch Game of Thrones, but we'll figure something out.
We end up going like that's the thing about it is like it kind of ends up pretty much being the winter. I mean, we're already in like fall, winter. We usually go through to December, right?
Yeah, because it's till December 21st.
Oh, good. I think I got it right this time.
Awesome.
I did it.
Nice. Well, check, folks. If you're interested in hearing some of the previous fallback spring forward segments, you can definitely check the archives on picturelockshow.com or check out the podcast. So we're going to go ahead and get started with this year, fall 2017, most and least anticipated films. So fall hits Friday, September 22nd through Thursday, December 21st. So I'm going to go ahead and kick us off with my least anticipated film of the fall. Now, I will say this, in terms of my least anticipated films, the films that can fall back, there's no particular order to this, but for my most anticipated, it is going to be an order of from five down to one, and one being my most anticipated film. So the least anticipated, number five for Kevin Sampson, is Jigsaw. Now, I don't even get, you know, why this film is being created. I think as we talked about last week, Robert, with it, there was definitely a time in my life in which I was collecting a lot of horror, and so Saw was one of those films where you watch it mind blown at the end, it was amazing, and then you keep trying to recapture, you know, that magic of the first one, but you don't quite get it, but yet you get some great traps and this, that, the other. So I'm definitely a fan of the franchise, but at this point, the times that I watch the films, it is definitely on Netflix or Redbox or some kind of way that like I don't have to pay to see it in the theaters. You know, the fact that the last film, Saw 7, The Final Chapter, it was a lie. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me. The film is coming out October 27th, and they're still trying to chase this ghost of who Jigsaw is when we saw he already died, or at least we thought we did. I mean, this is kind of soap opera-ish to keep trying to bring this guy back to life, and I'm not down for that. Like I said, I probably will watch it once it hits Netflix and it's on instant and it's just like, oh, what are you doing at, you know, 11 p.m. on a Sunday night? Okay, I'll watch it. But otherwise, they could have kept this back. So my number five, Jigsaw.
Yeah, you know, I also put Jigsaw. I have mine kind of a sort of an order, but I will adjust as I see that we line up here, and I put Jigsaw pretty low on the list. I have no interest in this film franchise. I definitely remember going to see the first one when Saw came out, And I was pretty inventive. The term torture porn had only recently entered the kind of cultural lexicon. And it was, you know, it was kind of scary. It was kind of low budget. It was thoughtful. It actually kept some secrets and wasn't all about just showing you complete, you know, kind of pain and gruesome traps. Now it has completely devolved with not even, and there's, the thing about this series is it's not fun. It's dull. It's like, it's got this kind of thin web of morality that I guess is supposed to propel the plot, but it really is just a grimy, mean-spirited way to show torture that they can repackage endlessly because the narrative is stupid and incomprehensible. It's all about just like making people suffer. And again, fine, but at least make it fun. Do what like Final Destination did. Or, you know, like I feel like those movies had like kind of like a sly humor to them. And Jigsaw is just unfun and, well, I guess I don't know how Jigsaw is going to be, but that series looks unfun. And this is something of a reboot, I guess. It's the first one not to be called Saw, whatever. So maybe they're going to try and revive some of the spirit, that DIY spirit of the original. But I have no hopes for this being a movie that I will be going to see or expect anything truly, expect anything at all from. So.
Agreed. All right. Well, I guess if that's your number five as well, then I'm going to move on to number five, most anticipated, a.k.a. You Can Let This Spring Forward. Now, this one, I don't think you might not have it on the list, but this one just really kind of intrigued me. It's called The Foreigner, and it's directed by Martin Campbell. And so this stars Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan. And basically, it's just about a humble businessman with a buried past who seeks justice when his daughter is killed in an act of terrorism. Now, you know, in a world full of ageism, and that I'm talking about Hollywood, you know, sometimes Hollywood does not allow actors to age gracefully and actually show them aging on the screen. And we know Jackie Chan has been just a master in his field. And I don't think this guy gets enough props, at least in the United States. But, you know, in some ways you might want to call this like a Liam Neeson role in which he's going after these bad guys. But the trailer looks absolutely stunning. You know, at first I was like, oh, no, not this. Don't do it, Jackie. But as I watched the trailer, like, it's actually really dope. And you know, Jackie doesn't say too much in the trailer, and so you really can see what I love about his face is it looks like a weathered man who, you know, obviously in the film he's lost his daughter, and he's just going to get that revenge. Like, that's all there is to it. And this has been done before. It's nothing new. But in terms of action, I'm an action junkie. Loads of respect for Jackie Chan, but the trailer definitely sold me. The Foreigner comes out October 13th, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I did see something about that and considered it. I didn't know enough about it, but I, you know, like everybody else in this planet, really, grew up with, you know, the amazing work of Jackie Chan as our kind of martial arts fetish grew here in the United States, and all the, you know, all the Drunken Master movies and Rumble in the Bronx. It's good to see him treated maybe more as a legacy actor, or have the, you said the Liam Neeson. I was thinking like the Jean-Claude Van Damme in JCVD treatment. But either way, yeah, letting a kind of weathered actor who's maybe best physical days are behind him, but I that presence is so familiar, I would really like to see him work more. And he has done some voice acting too lately. He's, you know, in the
little
CGI film, choosing, I want to say Kung Fu Panda, but that may just be racist. I don't remember. He was something. I don't know. I don't have kids.
Yeah, I so think he was actually movies. Like a bunny in one of those, and I forget which one it is. I think, but yeah, you're right. And I do think that. I think this is better. I think it's better to be like in a Liam Neeson type role than Jean-Claude Van Damme, because like, come on, like JVD is more of a punchline versus like Liam Neeson, like, you know, it's taking it seriously. And I think this, to me, it just looks like they're really taking it seriously. And that's what I'm excited about.
All right. And I would concur. I will take a slightly different direction with mine and go with Blade Runner 2049. I'm really excited about this movie. This actually comes out October 6th. This is the follow-up, the official follow-up to Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, and it stars Harrison Ford reprising the role of Rick Deckard. It also stars Ryan Gosling, Ana de Armas. I think Robin Wright is in this. Unfortunately, Jared Leto's in this. I don't like him, but he is serviceable apparently in the role. 30 years after the events of the first film, I do not like. He is one of my most hated actors. He is a pompous ass of a man. I don't like his music. I think he is. I don't know, man. I didn't want to get into that, but I really do not like Jared Leto.
The wrath coming off of this. So, you know, Dallas Buyers Club sucked. Suicide Squad sucked.
Suicide Squad, that was panned for a number of reasons. Dallas Buyers Club was great. Again, he's good in it, and part of it is that I think he does, you know, he works hard for roles. I mean, it blew me away to see Requiem for a Dream. He was in Fight Club, like many of my, you know, beloved films of youth he was in. But it's one of those where the mixture of his actual apparent persona and the kind of pompousness of prestige pictures just mixes and gives me a bad taste in my mouth. But nevertheless, Blade Runner will succeed. And that's, again, I'm... This one is helmed by Denis Villeneuve, who has done Arrival most recently, and also Sicario, and I really have a lot of faith in him. This is it's almost a three-hour movie, so that's a lot of time to work through what I hope will be a sci-fi heavy plot. The cinematography looks absolutely gorgeous, and really the original Blade Runner was already a beautiful kind of masterpiece of a movie, and it's hard to improve on that, so I hope they kind of stay in the same vein and don't try and like overdo it. It's with the kind of CGI, but there are some interesting elements of scale in this future world, and I'm excited to see how that translates to the big screen. I obviously haven't read. I don't know if this was a book. I don't think this was. I don't think Philip Dick wrote a follow-up. So this is going to be a completely new script. And I'm just really excited. I love Ryan Gosling. Does a great job. Harrison Ford in his kind of crusty old age is almost even better. Like grumpy Harrison Ford is a person I like a lot. And right. Or weathered Harrison Ford, I guess, to maybe go back to what we were talking about with Jackie Chan. And I was excited to see him in Star Wars. I'm excited to see him back as Rick Deckard. I think it's going to be at least a good movie. I think it could be a really great movie. And I'm at least from the previews and everyone involved, it should be pretty fun and thrilling. Blade Runner 2049.
All right. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm joined by Robert Winship. We're talking in our Fallback Spring Forward 2017 edition, the films that we want to see and that could actually fall back for the fall. So right now we're moving into our number four least anticipated. Robert, I'll let you hit that up.
Okay. Number four least anticipated was... I went with Geostorm, coming out October 20th. From director Dean Devlin, and that's all that is. I could tell you that, and that should tell you all you need to know. The man behind Independence Day and Independence Day whatever the heck was the last one, Resurgence, Revival, Annihilation, Desecration, whatever it was. He's behind the Godzilla 96, behind the original Stargate, and I didn't realize until now that there's a new Stargate coming out. So there's good and bad in there, but more on the kind of negative CGI-driven, lunky end of that. This stars, it's got Gerard Butler in it, and Gerard Butler is, he's batting at about 100 right now. With good fun kind of CGI driven movies. He was in White House Down, right? There were those two movies that came out once. It's a lot of schlock. Geostorm, I want to read this to you. I'm going to read the synopsis real quick because it's a little crazy. But after an unprecedented series of natural disasters threatened the planet, the world's leaders came together to create an intricate network of satellites to control the global climate and keep everyone safe. But now, something has gone wrong. The system built to protect the Earth is attacking it, and it's a race against the clock to uncover the real threat before the worldwide geostorm wipes out everything and everyone along with it. It is CGI heavy, and from the looks of the preview, like, it still looks, it looks like bad, maybe approaching even like Sharknado levels of CGI. I was really kind of bummed that the one thing that this should have is a lot of money to create some cool disaster porn set pieces. Cause that's what this is. It's all about setting, you know, like Gerard Butler's in space, they're kidnapping the president, there's, you know, tsunamis wiping out New York. It's nuts. And that could be a lot of fun, but I think I get the sense that it's not going to live up to the fun that it should. But that's Dean Devlin for you. We'll talk about him again when I get some more hard news about Stargate, which could go either way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, since it doesn't really matter to me in terms of the ones that I think I can fall back, I'm going to go ahead and side with you on that. That was definitely one of my least anticipated films. And for all the different things that you said, I mean, you know, it seems like we have these climate disaster movies every, you know, once in a while. I forget the one with Jake Gyllenhaal, which actually was kind of fun. But this one... The Day After Tomorrow, I think it was. That came on not too recently this year on TV, and I watched it. It was a fun ride. But, you know, this is just a little bit, I don't know. Like, I mean, it could. So part of it is, like, imagining, can this actually happen? You know, like, what was the Twister back in the day? You know, like, that stuff could actually happen. Now, you know, we could get into do we have man-made things that can control the weather or not? You know, that's up for debate. But, like, this, the scale of what they're trying to have us believe is just a little crazy. And, like you said, it's CGI heavy. And so it's kind of one of those things where it's like, do you really want us to believe, you know, the suspension of disbelief, it's going to start probably from like the first frame to the last frame. And I'm not really a big fan of, this just from the trailer. I mean, I feel like we've seen this, we've done it before. We're going to follow our heroes. And one thing that I hate about these kinds of films is that literally, if you actually stop to think about it, like, we ride with the heroes and we're glad that they're safe, but we watch like thousands of people die around them as they weave in and out of traffic or fly over like Earth that's opening up and swallowing people under it. It's kind of like sick in a way if you really stop to think about it. But Geostorm, I'll put that up as my number four as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe a conversation for another time, but certainly like in the sense that we're sticking with the hero with whom we will identify, and so we see ourselves as safe. The countless people who in that film are, you know, like wiped out, kind of can be desensitizing in a time and place. Like, we live in a pretty secure part of the world for now, and we are not going to suffer, or, well, have not yet suffered the way that other people in third world countries or even in our own country have suffered. And it can be kind of desensitizing if you identify with these characters all the time and don't see the great human cost, if it doesn't immediately affect you. I can't say for sure how the psychology of that works, but yeah, just another reason not to like geostorm.
Yeah, man. So, all right, what do you got for your number four? Spring forward.
Number four, my spring forward is a movie firmly planted in the winter, and it is The Snowman, directed by Thomas Alfredson, who also directed Let the Right One In and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. This stars Michael Fassbender and Chloe Sevigny, Rebecca Ferguson. I'll read the synopsis. When an elite crime squad's lead detective, Harry Hole, played by Michael Fassbender, investigates the disappearance of a victim on the first snow of winter, he fears an elusive serial killer may be active again. With the help of a brilliant recruit, played by Rebecca Ferguson, the cop must connect decades-old cold cases to the brutal new one if he hopes to outwit this unthinkable evil before the next snowfall. So this is based on a novel, which it feels like if you watch this preview, and it's got that kind of psychological crime thriller a la Silence of the Lambs, or I guess it's Scandinavian, so I'm going to say like Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. But I put a lot of faith in Michael Fassbender to elevate the material that he's in. I loved Let the Right One In, both the original and the remake. I like the Scandinavian setting. I like all the, you know, the kind of long shots of blankets of snow and using that kind of that coldness and that isolation to draw out the horror of a mysterious serial killer. And the cast in this looks really good. Even has Val Kilmer in it. I haven't seen old Val in a while. And I hope he's back.
Yeah.
I hope he's back to a normal. He went off the rails there for a little while, so I'm excited to see him in this. But Michael Fassbender in anything will catch my attention. This director has done well with the material he's given. I like a crime thriller, a psychological thriller, and I really love the setting for this. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I know this is one my wife and I will go see together. So The Snowman comes out October 13th.
All right. Well, you know, I got to say, you've already knocked out two of my most anticipated, but because it's most anticipated, I'm just going to hold off, and I'm still going to do mine, but I'll do it pretty brief. But yeah, you got some good taste there, Mr. Winship. For my number four most anticipated, I have Suburbicon. Now, you know, this film is directed by George Clooney. It's written by Joel and Ethan Coen. It stars Matt Damon, Julianne Moore, Oscar Isaac. So, you know, it's got a lot of star power behind it, which is kind of why I think it's kind of taking off in terms of the Film Fest circuit. I think that it played at TIFF earlier. By the time you hear this, it might have been a couple of weeks ago. But it's getting pretty good reviews. If you watch the trailer, it does seem like a really quirky, it's got that quirky Coen humor to it, and that we've come to see. And basically the super brief synopsis is a home invasion rattles a quiet family town. And I believe it's set in the late 50s. But Matt Damon plays the main character, and you know, it's a home invasion that goes wrong, and it seems like his quiet character actually starts to make some things happen in the town. And so I think I'm really kind of looking forward to seeing this, because you know, the Coens, I do enjoy their writing, their characters, how they build up characters, you know, George Clooney, I will say I do kind of enjoy him as a director. So I'm interested to see kind of what it's like when he gets behind the lens. I mean, you know, you think about Good Night and Good Luck, Leatherheads, that wasn't that great, but The Ides of March, and yeah, exactly. So I will be the first to admit that this could go either way, right? You know, these guys like to play in the sandbox together. So just because you got George Clooney, Matt Damon, you know, the Coens together, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a hit. It does mean that, you know, they got together for a rec league game after school to kind of to make a film. So hopefully the buzz that's coming out of the festivals, you know, is accurate, and I think we might be in for a little treat. I definitely think it'll probably be a film that we forget next year, but for this year, I could see it making a lot of buzz. So I'm looking forward to seeing Suburbicon.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. Joel and Ethan Coen are masters of the form, and it's tempting to kind of bump up anything that they're even remotely associated with a few points. And certainly if they're working with Clooney, who they've worked with before, not as a director, but I have serious concerns about that. Like, it's not concerns, I guess. I think I want more Coen Brothers movies directed by the Coen Brothers, you know?
Right,
George
right.
Clooney. Give me Coen Brothers, you know? It's such an event. And they're such, you know, experts to watch and so enjoyable, that I just am like, well, why are you giving this guy, why are you giving the kid the keys to the car? You know, like, let dad drive. But it
I
is
like
interesting,
that.
And it
I
is,
like,
it does,
like
it piques
yeah,
my interest.
Why are you giving the kid the keys to the car? Why don't you drive? I get it. Well said.
Which All is right, a little unfair because George Clooney, you know, has been around for a hot minute, but his directing resume is kind of short. But there's some highlights in there. It's not all bad. So it'll be interesting. It's not on my list, but I'm interested.
You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. We are talking about our fall back, spring forward, most anticipated and least anticipated films of 2017 for the fall. So right now we're moving into the number three category, the number three slot. And I'll take this first. You know, this was on my list last year, and, you know, Tyler Perry is a movie-making machine. He is back with Tyler Perry's Boo to a Madea Halloween. You know, it's interesting because a lot of these films are coming out on my birthday, October 20th. So I don't feel like this is a gift, Tyler. I think this is a curse. It's a, you know, an annual thing that comes out. I will probably, you know, if somebody paid for my ticket, I would go see it in the theaters. I will definitely, like I said last year, I will wind up seeing it, but most likely on Netflix or some other means like that. You know, the thing about these films, and, you know, basically it's Madea, Bam, and Hattie venturing onto a haunted campground. And the group must literally run for their lives when monsters, goblins, and boogeymen are unleashed. I'm sorry, but like that just, come on, man. I mean, like, this is the deal. And Boo. Man, I can't believe I have to talk about this. Like, this is one of those times when, as a critic, like, you have to muster up something to say other than, like, I just don't want to see this. And this is taking a lot. So basically, in, you know, the first one, you know, it's always these, like, loosely or thinly plotted out stories. The funny part is when Madea, Bam, Hattie, when they all get together and they just start riffing, and just kind of, it seems like more like improvisation, when they're sitting out like on the porch or something like that. Those moments are hilarious, and that's honestly probably why most of Tyler Perry's fans go to his films, because you want those moments. But then as a critic, the rest of the film is just so, like, not well put together story-wise. And therefore, it's hard to really take it seriously. You know that, you know, there's going to be, you know, some young people that have issues staying disciplined. Madea comes in, keeps them disciplined, and that's it. Like, that's the movie every single time. So now the fact that you're trying to guise it under horror, it's not working. And, you know, I think that it would be different if, like, Tyler really took it seriously. And made it where as many times people that are watching horror is like, well, if I were black and I was in that situation, like, I would get out of there. Or, like, you know, if he took it seriously and, like, actually made it where Madea, like, instead of laughing her way through everything, like, did stuff that, like, okay, that makes sense, plus a few jokes, I think it would work. But anyways, I'm done.
What interests me now is, all right, so when is there going to be, given the prolific nature of the Madea character in Tyler Perry movies, what is the cinematic property that needs to cross over with Madea to revitalize the series? Is it an Alex Cross Madea movie? Is it an Ernest revival? Like, she's kind of like, the Madea character is in, like, Ernest P. Worrell, you know, like, levels of movie ridiculousness. Does Madea show up as a cameo in a Marvel property? That's really where this series needs to go now. They need to think about crossover, a way to really highlight, to maybe contrast, to provide some relief to the Madea character, and let Tyler Perry as Madea really shine outside of his comfort zone. What movie, what cinematic property would be a great crossover for Madea?
You know, that is an awesome question. You know, like, it kind of would be cool to see Madea in a Marvel movie. Like, could you imagine if, like, she's walking down the street and then, like, you know, a building falls on her or something like that? I don't know, honestly. I don't think you can plop her into any world other than her own and, you know, take her seriously, or, you know, not look and be like, oh, what in the world is going on, you know? So, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I know that there have been, excuse me, those crossovers where he tried to have, was it Madea, was it The Big Happy Family, or I don't remember, but it was with, like, the redneck comedian guy.
Not Jeff Dunham, Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah, so that was a Madea Christmas. I mean, right now the question is, when are we going to have a Madea Easter, a Madea Thanksgiving, and what would be another
Madea comes to Hanukkah,
a Madea's New Year's,
the subway, Madea, yeah, in the White House. Yeah, I mean, there's no end to it. So really, you just have to, you gotta zoom in and let that zany work itself out in a myriad of situations. Madea in the White House is something I need to. I'm ready to pay money to see that.
You know what? I think I'd be willing to see a Madea White House Down 3. That would be dope.
It's a Gerard Butler movie. She needs to be in one of these disaster movies. You know, kind of clonking people on the head as they're outrunning a fireball through, you know, whatever, the Brooklyn Bridge.
Exactly. Didn't your mama teach you manners? Yeah, I think that would be awesome.
We don't have time, Madea. No time. Yeah, we figured it out.
Yo, we got to act this out. Come on, let's. Oh, man, that is hilarious. All right, so, Robert, I think you just invented, we'll have to do another segment. I know some podcasts do it, but we'll have to role play, you know, a Madea White House Down 3. That'll be awesome.
That's good stuff. I'm ready for it. I'm writing the characters in my head as we speak.
All right, you're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and I'm talking with Robert Winship, our Fallback Spring Forward segment, and, you know, just finished talking about my number 3 least anticipated film. Robert, please tell me, like, that was yours so we don't have to talk about that again.
I don't know. The more we talk about it, the more excited I am about it. But I will say Mamiya wasn't on my list.
All right. What's on your list?
I put for the least anticipated, I'm going to kind of blow through these real quick. I actually put two movies because they're basically the same movie. It's Bad Moms Christmas and Daddy's Home 2, both coming out in early November. Bad Moms Christmas, Mila Kunis, Kirsten Bell, Catherine Hahn, and Susan Sarandon. These are the ladies of Bad Moms, which was, you know, a serviceable comedy about, you know, women doing wrong, doing bad, mothers that are tired of the responsibilities of, you know, that the world puts on them, that society puts on them, and just kind of out to have a good time. And now their moms are put in the mix. And similarly, Daddy's Home is about the characters from Daddy's Home 1, or just Daddy's Home, Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, and their fathers, played by Mel Gibson and I think John Lithgow. I forgot the star of that. But I don't know. They're kind of holiday-oriented sequels to semi-successful comedies. But comedies that were lackluster, didn't have – Bad Moms would probably be better than Daddy's Home. But they just kind of stuff – Kristen Bell especially and Will Ferrell. Like, you just stuff Will Ferrell in anything. He does his thing, and it you just feel like you're watching the same movie over and over and over again. There's some, I think, some humor to be mined from the fact that Mel Gibson and Mark Wahlberg are to play father and son. It seems passable. Maybe they'll do okay, but I'm not looking forward to either of them. And they seem, yeah, just kind of like a cash grab, a holiday cash grab. That's what it's about.
Yeah, I will definitely agree with you. Those would definitely be honorable mentions on my list. Again, these aren't films that, like, I'd say I won't see. Like, I'd be willing to see them on Netflix if it was on, you know, like, you're not expecting much, maybe a few laughs here and there, but like you said, yes, it's definitely a cash grab for the holidays. And honestly, like, I didn't think either of those films were that good to, elicit a sequel. But maybe it did do well in the box office, because I certainly didn't support it in the box office. I did see them, like I said, via online. I forget what it was, and I don't want to get myself in trouble. Because I know how I see some films, and but anyways, let's move on. Most anticipated, number three, Robert already hit this up, so The Snowman was my number three, directed by Thomas Alfredson, for the same reasons that you said. If Michael Fassbender is in it, I'm pretty interested. Like you said, I think he does do a good deal of elevating the material that he has to work with. It's got Charlotte Gainsbourg, J.K. Simmons, and like you said, Val Kilmer. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that film. It kind of reminds me of Insomnia. In terms of like snow and, you know, just kind of how that setting, like you said, it really kind of draws you in, and, you know, the harsh winter becoming, you know, another character that, you know, our heroes are up against. So my number three was The Snowman.
Yeah, good choice. My, I'll try to pick up speed here. My number three was Darkest Hour, which I was really sad to find out is not about DC's, perhaps best metal band, Darkest Hour, but in fact is a Winston Churchill biopic. Still, this one is directed by Joe Wright. Joe Wright is a fantastic director of period pieces. He has done Atonement, which is a phenomenal, beautiful movie. He did the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, which may be the movie I've seen the most in my life, thanks to my wife. But it is a fantastic movie. He also did Anna Karenina, which was a really inventive movie, and really kind of thought about how to bring that novel to life. It stars Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman has put on the old man makeup and the fat suit. He has fully embodied Winston Churchill, a transformative role, which I have some reservations about, but I expect a lot of scenery chewing in the previews. He was dropping some of these, you know, most famous Churchill quotes. But I have a lot of faith in Joe Wright taking this movie. It's going to be tough with the scope of it, because it's, you know, Churchill, as he becomes the prime minister, dealing with Nazi forces. So there's a lot to tackle there. So a script that tries to handle too much, I think, will fail. So I'm hoping that it stays kind of close to the Churchill character and his relationships while providing some occasional epic scenes of battle, which it seemed to promise. Also, Ben Mendelsohn is in this, whom I love, and has done a great job in Star Wars. He's great in Bloodline. And Joe Wright's favorite, Lily James, will be in this. So I'm excited about it. I have some reservations. Gary Oldman can kind of go a little hard sometimes. Like he might take on the role a little too with a little too much excitement, which is why I said I feel like there's going to be some serious scenery chewing. But I don't know. I trust Joe Wright with this, and it should at least be interesting. I feel like I know the crowds that are going to go see, you know, a Thanksgiving movie about Winston Churchill.
Yeah, this one, it's on my radar, but it's definitely not on my list. I'm not a big fan of, like, period pieces, but, you know, it does have a great cast, and looks like a pretty good director, although he did direct Pan. But, you know, it's definitely, I think with Pan, it elicited that fairy tale, nice huge set pieces, etc. So I could definitely see how what you're saying in terms of him being able to capture a certain period. And as we look at, you know, periods of old, it can bring up a certain amount of foreign imagination, in a sense, because, you know, we're going back into the past. And so if that makes sense, I think this will be something that we definitely hear about. And Ben Mendelsohn, I just gotta go back to him for a second. I remember first seeing him in 2010's Animal Kingdom, and ever since then, anything that guy does, I am down for. So yeah, that's a pretty good choice, Mr. Winship.
Orson Krennic is like my new favorite villain in the Star Wars universe. It's so, nice. He's so good. Anyway.
All right.
We'll get to
that. I don't know, man. I don't know if that made the cutoff, but, you know, December 21st.
Well, okay. All right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Picture Lock. We have reached our final two most and least anticipated films of the fall for 2017 in our semi-annual Fallback Spring Forward segment. Mr. Winship, I'm going to let you take your number two least anticipated film. Go ahead first.
Okay, so this is right at the tail end of the fall-winter period. And that is Jumanji. Welcome to the jungle. this stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, and Karen Gillan. This is in a brand new Jumanji adventure. Four high school kids discover an old video game console and are drawn into the game's jungle setting, literally becoming the adult avatars they choose. But they must survive to get out. So this is the original Jumanji based on the book by, based on like the children's book by Chris Van Allsburg, was about a board game that these kids find, and it kind of comes alive as they play. Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, kind of takes the Tron route of using an old video game console, an old like an Atari console, and they're not Atari, it's like Sega or Nintendo. Regardless, the players become avatars in a real life jungle game. I'm sure that this will be a lot of fun. There's a considerable, if maybe self-defeating level of charisma in Dwayne Johnson, Kevin Hart, and Jack Black, each vying for like the funny man role to different degrees. I'm sure Karen Gillan will be completely edged out in that kind of boys club. Again, Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart and Jack Black are doing a lot of like roles that require a little of them, but just kind of play off their kind of natural charisma and humor. Nobody was asking for a Jumanji reboot. again, it could be kind of fun. I like the jungle setting. Could battling the beasties should be at least exciting to watch physically with, like I said, loads of comic relief. But I think overall, it seems like the spirit of this, like, is going to be more on the phoning it in part. Not that the original Jumanji was anything to write home about and was actually a pretty terrible movie that a lot of people watched at a really important time in their life. So, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Watch it on Netflix.
Yeah, that wasn't even on my radar. I totally forgot about that. But for all the reasons you said, I'm with you 100%. Nobody was looking for Jumanji. Reboot or whatever. And honestly, I think the concept is a little bit silly. For those of us diehard, book / Robin Williams version fans. That definitely makes the cut for that. That film can fall back. But speaking of a film that no one was really looking for, my number two is Jeepers Creepers 3. Now this comes out.
Is that a thing? You didn't make that up?
I didn't even know that. Oh man, yeah, buddy. It's supposed to come out September, I think, 26th. And basically, I love how some people describe it as a hotly anticipated as a not particularly anticipated thing. Jeepers Creepers 3 tells us what happened in the 4 days that passed between the narratives of Jeepers Creepers and Jeepers Creepers 2. I just think that this is ridiculous. It's one of those things where, so much time has passed that it might not really do too well. I mean, like, you didn't even realize that it was coming out. And that's the whole thing. Like, Jeepers Creepers is an excellent film. Like, I love it as a horror film and I'd watch it, anytime it comes on. But like kind of revisiting, it's a little bit too late, but who knows? I mean, I think from what I saw on one of the trailers, it's in theaters for like 1 day, which is kind of interesting and says a lot, right there. But, Jeepers Creepers 3 was my number two. It's directed by Victor Salva, who, directed Jeepers Creepers 1 and 2, and so maybe, just maybe, that might mean something, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm shocked that that's not direct-to-video. Shocked.
Yeah.
VOD. But whatever. Oh, gosh, I didn't even know that was happening. I'm glad I missed that, and I will forget it as soon as I say the next words. This was a tough call. For a number of reasons, because my two final spring forwards are big movies, and I generally like to stay with some of the smaller stuff. I'm more interested in thoughtful smaller indie picks, but I just giddy about Star Wars: The Last Jedi. I am thrilled with the cast, and I'm interested in the director, Rian Johnson, who this is like kind of the trajectory. You direct like one great indie film for him, Brick, and then you're kind of given a slightly larger work, and now he's directing Star Wars. That's amazing. Like Colin Trevorrow directing Jurassic Park after just a couple of indie features. And I think that probably serves this very kind of maybe a democratic Star Wars, a Star Wars that can kind of appeal to everybody. You're not looking to change anything up, really. You know the narrative, you know the tone for the most part. You're excited about the new ships, you're excited about, you're excited about the smugglers and the overlords, you're excited about the Jedi. You know the stories well enough, so putting a director who can serviceably bring all of this to the screen. I mean, there's so many people involved in the making of a Star Wars film that just having a pretty decent director, a decent young director, I think is enough to make these movies stick. The cast of this movie is just so dang awesome. Adam Driver, Laura Dern, Benicio Del Toro, Mark Hamill, finally. This is the one where Luke Skywalker is a prominent piece. Andy Serkis. I think this is the last appearance of Carrie Fisher in as Leia.
It is. Yes.
Gwendolyn Christie, Tom Hardy's rumored to be in it, Domhnall Gleeson, Daisy Ridley. Like, it's just such a fantastic cast. And to some degree that bothers me because I want to see so many of these characters. I want to see more of them. And you know, you can only fit so many storylines. Well, you can fit quite a few storylines, but you can only reasonably give people a few storylines to kind of hold on to, and you have so many great actors you have so many great actors here. It's Star Wars. What's not to be excited about? It's a big event. It's cool that it's a big event. I'm not quite burnt out on Star Wars, so I'm super excited, really excited to see Mark Hamill back to being a major role in his older, more grizzled Luke Skywalker role.
Yeah. Well, I can't agree with you more. I'm going to have to say that I kind of cheated in terms of my number two most anticipated. And you've named both of them already. It's Blade Runner 2049 and, Star Wars as well. I think for all the reasons that we talked about or you talked about earlier with Blade Runner, you know, it'll be good to see that kind of world back on the screen. I love the synth sound or score and the soundtrack. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And then Star Wars, it's the same deal. This turn, like that 1 through 3 of Star Wars was just horrible. But right now we're being served greatness, these films are bringing out all the feelings that we had when we were younger and we first watched Star Wars. So I'm really excited to see, what they're going to do with this. And, that anticipation, think about how smart that was for them to not show Mark Hamill until the end. And he didn't. Yeah, and it's like he didn't even get to say anything. What? Hello, and now, we're gonna although we might have forgotten about it last year, now it's kind of like wow, this is gonna be huge. Like, it's been everything has kind of been leading up to this. So I'm really excited about that. On top of that, Rian Johnson, I just enjoy him as a director. You did mention Brick. But one film that, he's done since then is Looper. And I just thought that was an amazing film in terms of kind of dealing with time and bending time. And, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely go check that out. It stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who was obviously in Brick, and Bruce Willis. So as a director, I'm
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is also in Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
Exactly, his voice. But I'm a big fan of the director, a big fan of the franchise. So yes, I would agree with you 100%. Star Wars: The Last Jedi, and it did make the cut. I'm sorry, I was wrong, because last year I think, it was like a Star Wars film that didn't make the cut. But you were right. You have done your due diligence, Mr. Winship. And that brings us to the number one most and least anticipated films of the fall of 2017. I'm going to go ahead and knock this one out. Flatliners was, I guess you could say, number one. Like, again, with my least anticipated films, it really didn't matter. It's another remake that nobody asked for. The original was done in 1990, and it starred Kiefer Sutherland and Julia Roberts. And now this one stars Ellen Page and Diego Luna as med students addicted to killing and resuscitating each other to find out what's on the other side. I just think that the concept, the trailer, it's kind of silly. And, again, it's just one of those things where, listen, if you're going to get what you're asking for. So, you know, if you guys get annihilated by some kind of force that, you know, because you kept wanting to kill yourself and come back, then that's your fault. And it's kind of silly. I don't want to pay my money to see you do it. So that's my number one least anticipated Flatliners. Comes out September 29th. Avoid it.
Yeah, I thought that's what I read about it. I'm kind of interested, but I didn't feel strongly one way or another to put it on my list. So, but I could kind of agree with you on that, Flatliners. So, I've waited a long time for this. My least anticipated movie is, drumroll please, Justice League. This one's aimed at you, Kevin. Justice League by director Zack Snyder. Starring Ben Affleck, Gail Godot, Jason Momoa, Ezra Miller.
What?
All your favorites from the DC, from the dry, dull, monotone world of Zack Snyder directing, you know, the DC cinematic universe. I don't like Ben Affleck as Batman. It doesn't seem like it's much fun. It seems like it's still trying to be too cool, which is I'll put it this way, because this is going to set up what I'm about to talk about as my most favorite. Like, I'm not a comic book guy. Like, I watched a lot of the animated series that came out in the 90s, like everybody else did. I liked Spider-Man, I liked Batman, I liked the X-Men, I liked all of that. I was never a nerd to the point that I followed it through up until adulthood. But there were consistent products for all of that. As we moved into, you know, the Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, and then the Christopher Nolan Batman. Again, I'm mixing DC and Marvel properties here. But I never cared so much to consistently see these characters lived out just because they were, you know, established properties. I was never that much of a nerd about it. So Justice League, for me, obviously it's going to happen. Has to happen. These are massive movies. But I just have no interest. Didn't like Batman versus Superman. I don't want Ben Affleck in the role of Batman. And that's a character who I have a lot of affection for. I didn't actually see Wonder Woman. I was not excited about Gal Gadot, but I've heard good things about it. She looks fine in that. Jason Momoa as Aquaman is cool. But again, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of fun. It doesn't seem like there's a spirit of comic book fun in this movie. And Zack Snyder is just, I don't know. It almost feels a little lifeless to me. I think it would be it'll be a great movie that will be. It'll probably be a B movie, you know, a solid B movie. But I'm just really not looking forward to it, and I probably won't go see it in theaters.
Wow. Well, I appreciate that, because you're setting me up for my number one most anticipated film. It's Justice League. I'm actually excited to see this film because, you know, we all know, like, the DC cinematic universe sucks, especially in comparison to Marvel. But, you know, what I'm really kind of hoping, I mean, after the success of Wonder Woman, which Wonder Woman was a fantastic film to me, I really enjoyed it. I'm hoping that this will actually be a fun film, you know, kind of seeing the Flash coming into it, and you know, we're gonna see Wonder Woman, Batman, everybody kind of together. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to, and that's why I'm looking forward to it as a fun popcorn entertaining event. Like, this is what I go to some of the films that I really enjoy. These are one of those films that, like, I want to go with my friends, with the fellas, get some popcorn, you know, yell at the screen, oh snap, like it's just a fun time at the movies. And this is the deal. I don't know if you're a big you know, Netflix kind of Marvel fan, but you know, the Defenders, I just finished watching that on Netflix, and I have to say that I really enjoyed the Defenders more than I enjoyed the individual, like, Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones series, because when they came together, you don't have to get bogged down into one superhero the entire time. And so what the Defenders did well, which I'm hoping Justice League does well, is they riff off of each other, and then like you get just enough of the person to enjoy seeing them at work, and then you go to another person so that you're not like overburdened with them, because I think like on their own it gets a little old, it's a little trite in terms of storytelling. But again, I was excited about Suicide Squad, and you know, that was so, but I'm really excited to see how this goes down, Zack Snyder's Justice League. So yes, that's my number one. What's your number one? I was flabbergasted that your number one and my number one were total opposites. So go ahead.
I picked my number one, and this was a surprise to me. I try to arrange my picks similarly, so either they come out around the same time or have some sort of similarity, so that I can, here's an upside and downside to either a current trend or, a series, whatever. So my number one pick is one that surprised me, and that is Thor Ragnarok.
Wow.
I am really, truly excited about this. And in large part, I think it provides a nice contrast. The absolute, vividness of the color and scope of this film as compared to a Justice League, as compared to the DC, the Zack Snyder, sad gray DC universe. Thor Ragnarok it looks just vivid and bright and fun and wild. And it is directed by, somebody that I absolutely love, Taika Waititi, who has directed What We Do in the Shadows, Hunt for the Wilder People. He goes back with my boys, Flight of the Conchords. I think he's going to bring a good sense of humor to this. It looks like a lot of fun. It looks like a movie that doesn't take itself too seriously. A wonderful cast, obviously Chris Hemsworth reprising the role of Thor, Tom Hiddleston, Kate Blanchett as Hela. Is that what it is? Is that how you pronounce it?
That's a good question. I don't know. Keep going though.
They're imprisoned. The mighty Thor finds himself in a lethal gladiatorial contest against the Hulk, his former ally. He must fight for survival and race against time to prevent the all-powerful Hela from destroying his home and the Asgardian civilization. In the previews, they show these kind of majestic pictures, kind of like, if you're a fan of metal, Bathory's Blood, Fire, Death was the cover Asgardian. These kind of amazing, men on horses fighting in the sky, these kind of beautiful Viking panoramas. And the movie was trying to kind of capture some of that with even more color and even more of this kind of its sense of both adventure and grandeur. This movie's got Benedict Cumberbatch. Anthony Hopkins plays Odin. Obviously, Mark Ruffalo, who I like a lot as the Hulk, and I like as Bruce Banner even better. Jeff Goldblum is in this. Kate Blanchett is always a phenomenal and committed actor in anything she does. I think this role is perfect for her. She looks like she's having a really good time, and I'm excited. I don't go see a lot of I need to stop calling them comic book movies. I don't go and see a lot of Marvel or DC movies in the theaters, and this is one I will definitely go see in the theaters. I'm usually going to see other movies, or that's not really what I cover, what I feel like I know best, but this is one. I'm thrilled to support Taika Waititi, and I really love this cast, and I love the vision for this movie. I'm excited about Thor Ragnarok. It is my most anticipated movie of the fall.
Wow. Thor is not even on my radar. It fits somewhere in between least anticipated and most anticipated. It just falls into that chasm of the abyss, because I honestly, out of the Marvel films, Thor is one that I never really enjoy. And I think Taika Waititi has also said that, you know, this kind of represents Thor 1 to him, because, like, I don't think he even liked the first two. And so he's trying to make this where, you know, this is kind of like a revitalization of the Thor character. And I think Chris Hemsworth also kind of wants to make Thor a lot more funny. And so I just don't get into the character of Thor. I mean, you know, when we were growing up, like, I wasn't like, ooh, I'm Thor, you know, like, he was like old school, kind of like Captain America, and the films have not really done his character much justice. So, you know, yeah, you know, to each his own. I'm digging Justice League. You're digging Thor Ragnarok. I think I will definitely see both of them in theaters. There's not a question of that. But yeah, I'm not really super excited about it, but I don't know. We'll see. Ladies and gentlemen, what do you think about, you know, Robert and I's list? What were some of your favorite, most anticipated films? What are your least anticipated films? Did you think we're crazy on any of them? Do you think we're spot on? Let us know. Everything at Picture Lock Show. You can send us an email, picturelockshow@gmail.com. Look forward to hearing what you have to say. Robert Winship, dude, we have spent a lot of time talking about this, and probably too much for the radio, but the podcast will definitely have everything that we just talked about. How can people find you on social media?
I have a Twitter, at Robert underscore we. I have at Robert underscore Winship.
You sound like somebody's dad.
I appreciate not having a lot of social media presence. It keeps me doing actual work and not work to distribute that work, you know. But Robert underscore Winship, and I do have a website at robertwinship.com where I do post links to the reviews as well as some other stuff that I've written about. I'd say that's the best way. robertwinship.com, at Robert underscore Winship. And Kevin usually hooks me up with a shout out or a retweet. Kevin does most of the legwork for my writing on Picture Lock.
It's all good, man. I definitely love you being a part of the brand. Once again, Robert, thank you so much for coming on for us to talk about our fallback spring forward 2017 picks. It has been an absolute honor and a pleasure to make it this first year of actually doing it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the spring. But I appreciate you coming on once again. Thanks, Robert.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. I look forward to it.
That's all for this episode. I'd like to thank my guest, Robert Winship, for coming on the show. Be sure to check out picturelockshow.com for what to see at the movies this weekend. And also make sure you subscribe to the podcast, because Robert and I, we went in more depth on Tyler Perry and other things, but I had to cut it out due to time for the radio. So you definitely want to make sure you subscribe to the podcast. You can find Picture Lock on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, Pinterest, and Periscope, all social media. Is that Picture Lock Show? Watch back episodes of the TV show at youtube.com/Picture Lock Show. Don't forget to check out the website, picturelockshow.com, for movie reviews, news, and to subscribe to our newsletter to get a chance to win tickets for movie screenings in the DMV. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, you can fill out the form on the website. Drop me a line if you're enjoying the show as well at picturelockshow@gmail.com. All music is done by Mike S. the Prophet 13. Thanks, bro. I'm Kevin Sampson, and until next time, I hope you stay locked on film.